talking about.
Right.
Do you want to talk about some of these photographs?
Okay, yeah, we can talk about that first picture there, that the teepee, what you're seeing there, you go ahead, ladies down there, shows that a woman putting up a teepee. On the Plains Indians' time, the women were in charge of putting up the teepees and striking the teepees, or lodges we call them, and they could put up a teepee and strike it within about 5 minutes.
Wow.
And when they would go through a camp, a set camp, they would be maybe six or seven women going through, or maybe 20 or however large the camp was, and do nothing but set the lodge poles. And then there'd be another group of women coming behind him putting the covers on. Most men at that time were like today. They couldn't put up a teepee if they had to. You know, they couldn't take care of the home, the house part. But that was the way. That's the way they did it. And the women didn't want the men in their teepees to set them up. They knew how to set them up, very fast and efficient. And the men were doing other things, hunting and gardening and guarding the camp and warfare and stuff like this at that time. So, you know, the women took care of things like that.
Okay.
The next one here is a buffalo head on top of the lodge. Showing it possibly he was a buffalo hunter himself, a big hunter,
mm-hmm.
and plus we use things like this to honor the buffalo. He was our lifeblood on the plains. You know, he took care of us. He was our supermarket,
mm-hmm.
in a sense, and because he furnished everything that we'd eat, and not just him, but the other game here on the plains also. But the buffalo was the big thing at the time.
And there were a lot more of them.
Before the white man came, there's a saying, they even have the saying on the one of the TV programs, but a warrior could walk on the backs of buffalo from horizon to horizon and never touch the ground. The buffalo, before the white man came, roamed all the way to the east coast and to the west coast. You know, they said there was two types, the woodland type, but the woodland Indians back east even hunted buffalo. And before the white man came, we hunted the buffalo a different way than we did after he came and introduced the horse to us. You know, it was like we would get certain places and drive them off a cliff or mm-hmm. a bluff, killing, and our people would be at the bottom as they fell and go ahead and butcher them and stuff there. But he was furnished everything.
And I'm scrolling down to here's a
picture of Quanah.
Picture of Quanah Parker.
Mm-hmm. That was taken around, what did you say, about 1900 after Quanah had already surrendered.
Yeah.
If you can really notice that picture, he's riding a cavalry saddle. About an 1885 cavalry saddle. So it's got a U.S. blanket underneath there.
Buffalo in Palo Duro Canyon.
Right, that's
the spot we're looking at.
Yeah, picture of some of the buffalo herds, early herds of the buffalo back when it was on the Goodnight Ranch.
Uh-huh.
Roaming in the canyon.
And this is close, we're close to Caprock Canyon,
we're
so Palo Duro is not far away.
Right, no.
It's in the panhandle.
It's all in the panhandle. It's actually all extension of one canyon through here.
Okay. The old Goodnight Ranch?
Goodnight Ranch. He had a very, very large herd of buffaloes that he would have. And there's another picture of Quanah. Hmm. And I don't know when that one was taken. You have any idea?
I know there's a life-size one at Tulsa Museum, just like that.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, Quanah had a lot of pictures. He was like very famous by the 1900s, being pictures. This picture here is of Colonel Goodnight, the rancher, and that started the big ranch here in the canyon.
Uh-huh. And he had a ranch. He had a ranch that was like a million acres, right?
Right,
that the buffalo
still roamed on when he started his cattle ranch. And he bring the Indians in. He brought Quanah and some of the Comanches in for a hunt several times. And I think this is a picture of the last hunt. And these are Kiowa people from the Kiowa Nation over around Carnegie that came in for a hunt on the buffalo, going back kind of to the old days. The Kiowa man there, I can't tell the picture.
I think he's eating some of the buffalo.
Oh, is that what he's doing? Okay.
That's right after the, because only
oh, right
I know this
kill,
because
right.
This is right. Taken off Charles Goodnight's movie,
right.
1916.
Yeah, that was one of the things a lot of people didn't understand. As soon as you killed the buffalo, one of the first things you took was his liver and his heart, and you ate the liver raw.
Okay, we saw that in Dances with Wolves.
Yeah, but that was true. That's the way you did it.
Okay, and then here's
this is Old Horse and a Little Ghost. I think they're Kiowas. Just some pictures of the people that came.
Okay.
A young boy and the old man.
And you have a lot of interesting things to show us.
Show you.
We
here's
have about
things.
20 minutes to go.
20 minutes.
If you just joined us, I'm here with I'm Karen Loke, your host for our live webcast today, and with me is Teresa Parker. She's a granddaughter of famed Comanche chief Quanah Parker, and also Billy Turpin, who's the leader of the Plains Indians Intertribal Council. And he's brought a whole lot of things to show us. And what do you have there?
Okay, what I want to show you first is my fans. This particular fan is made of golden eagle feathers, tail feathers. There's five of them, and this is my ceremonial fan. I use this in doing different ceremonies.
Hold it real still so he can get a shot of it.
And the colors mean things to me. I'm retired military. It's red, white, and blue. That's my colors. Of course, I honor my country, and the red and white is also the color in the Muscogee Nation, and I honor my Indian Nation when I use this fan also. And of course, we're always honoring the eagle, and he was our sacred bird, especially on the plains here. The eagle feathers have a sacred power, have a healing power that we use, and we still believe that today. And I use this fan, like I said, in different ceremonies, what we call smoking ceremonies or smudging, where I use smoke, and I do cleansing ceremonies, different types of blessings. I perform weddings and stuff like this and use this fan. And this is my ceremonial fan.
And why do you do the cleansing? Why is that so important?
For someone that's sick, possibly, or having bad feelings, that's had a bad time in their life or something, and they would like to be blessed and have a cleansing, we do that for them.
Okay.
And this particular fan here, this was a gift. It is a tip-end of an eagle's wing stretched out to fly.
Okay, hold it real still there.
And this is my dance fan. I use this when I do gourd dancing. And gourd dancing to us is like a warrior's dance in the old days. Today it's for veterans. But it still flies. When I dance, I have to grip it very tightly. It's very light. But the way it is stretched out, when I move it through the air, it catches the air and it moves away from me. And as long as we take care of this fan and do it properly, and as I pass it on to my son and grandchildren, the spirit of this eagle will live forever. Because he lives within me, it also lives here.
So when you're dancing, the spirit is with you?
The spirit dances with us.
That's really neat.
And then this is, like I said, he will live forever as long as it's taken care of properly.
Now, where can one go to see these?
Our dances and stuff like this. We have powwows here in Amarillo twice a year. But in the state of Oklahoma and other places, there's powwows every weekend where the people gather together. And we call a powwow, it's like a gathering of family.
Mm-hmm.
We get together and people we hadn't seen in a year or two or 3 years or since last year, and families come together, and it's just a dancing, honoring our Creator. But there's different types of powwows now where we do contest dancing.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm trying to say. Where they dance for money. It's a prize money. It's kind of like a rodeo also. But the circle that we dance in is sacred, and it's blessed before anyone comes into it. Before a woman comes into the circle, if she is not in her native dress, she has to wear a shawl over her shoulders. And the only time any other people can come into the circle to dance is when we have an intertribal dance. And that invites everybody, all tribes, white and Indian.
Okay.
And this is, like I said, my dance fan.
We got about 15 minutes.
Okay, I'll cover these real quick. What other things I brought here is before the white man came, and when we did our hunting and hunting the buffalo and stuff like this, we didn't have the metal tips, so we used tips like this.
This tip, give the thumbs up there.
Yeah, these two tips right here are about, I had them checked, and they said they're anywhere from 300 to 400 years old. Spear tips, lance tips.
Now, these hunting techniques?
Hunting tips.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then when the white man came, he brought things like this for us to hunt with. This is a Hudson Bay trading point steel, and this particular point's about 200 years old. It was found here in the Texas Panhandle about 20 years ago. So this point actually came from the Hudson Bay area, fur traders trading it to the Indians for their furs. And I'd like to see the history of this, how it traveled from that time down to here and who had it, but it'd be very interesting. But these are different things that we hunted with then. And again, to kind of go back, before we got the steel points, we made weapons like this. This is a war club, just a rock on a stick. Really, it's all it is. When you separate the two, they're harmless, but when you put the two together, you have a very formidable weapon, even as today. It wasn't made to hack or anything. It was made to one solid blow would crush your skull or break your arm, break your ribs, break a leg. It's very heavy, very stout, and it's a very formidable weapon. A lot of people look at it the way the rock is formed. They want to call it the tomahawk, but it's not. It's just a war club.
And this was a weapon that all the tribes used?
Everybody had war clubs.
Okay. How many tribes were there in Texas?
Texas right now, in the state of Texas, about that time was probably about 10 or 12 major tribes at that time. The Caddo were here, the Apache were here, the Tonkawas were down south, because the Comanche and Kiowa, Cheyenne, Further to the east over here was the Apache. And there were some smaller tribes on down, further down that came across the border.